Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I'm Ted Kluck, joined again by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. And I say again because we may or may not have taped multiple eps this morning. But Boys, far from being sick of this and of you guys, I'm excited to talk about three more things.
Wait, was that even
three
an
more
option?
Random
we
things.
Can be sick of each other?
No, that's never an option.
Okay, I mean, you brought it up, so I didn't know if that was a thing that you were struggling with. Is that a thing you need to confess?
I'm not struggling. No, okay. I'm not struggling.
I'm super confused for a second there.
I was also feeling insecure.
I talked to my accountability guy about it for like an hour and a half last night. But no, I'm fine. I'm over it. Boys, we have a lot on our plate to talk about, and let's get right into it because we don't have to. We're not encumbered by business this week, so. We are in a little bit of a sponsorship lull, and that's okay because we're gonna use that time. We're gonna redeem it, and we're gonna make it redemptive. And that begs the question, Pipe, in the world of Christian entertainment, specifically Christian movies, this word redemptive gets bandied about a lot.
Yes,
and I hear it a lot. I teach at a Christian college. We are launching a film program, and I think anytime you launch a film program at a Christian college, there's this awkward moment of, are we gonna do crap? Right? Like, are we going to do crummy, like low budget, quote unquote, you know, Christian movies that are heavy handed? And I feel like this word redemptive is loaded. I feel like it has connotations sort of morality tales or whatever. But I want you to suss this out for us, man. Why are you tweaked about the word redemptive?
Well, I feel like at one point it was used really well. And here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I think for people, our listeners will understand this. It is following the same pattern as the word gospel, decades ago it had a meaning, and then it lost that meaning and just sort of fell away. And then it was reintroduced by thoughtful, careful people who were trying to reveal aspects of film that people had overlooked. You know, it's because there was sort of the divide between, you know, Christian films or good films and bad films along just moral content lines. And so people are trying to draw out redemptive themes. But now it's been co-opted and is now just sort of slapped on anything. And it's sort of regaining that – or it's sort of gaining that meaningless status again, I think.
Yeah.
Which bugs me because when it was used well, it was a really helpful thing to help explain why it is that you can watch – dark movies or violent movies or movies with content that maybe isn't, you know, we wouldn't look at and go, oh yes, that's morally acceptable. But there are redemptive themes to it or aspects and things like that. And so it no longer means anything, so how do we now point people to those movies? And this, what tweaked me recently was I wrote a piece a few weeks ago on La La Land and Manchester by the Sea. Mm-hmm. And one of them is a more sort of moral tale than the other, but they're both kind of amoral in a lot of ways, but such deep themes of truth in them. And I'm like, how do you express this without using the word redemptive? Because people are going to take redemptive as a defense of the film. It's now a moral defense. Mm. And I'm like, that's not what it means. Mm. So what I guess the question that I would have is, what do we use instead of redemptive, or what does redemptive actually mean so that when people use it, it's not just saying two moral thumbs up to this film.
Mm-hmm. Big R, what do you think, man? You're in the world of entertainment. What do you say about this?
Yeah, that's funny.
And by that, I mean you're a pastor.
That's right. Yeah, there you go. Well, that
it's
is
your job
that
to
is a world of entertainment.
Every single week. You have to bring it every week, Ronnie.
You know what? Absolutely. It's true, actually. It's true. This is the thing, man. I think what happens is that we get really upset by terms. And I think what that shows me is that instead of in the past when we would just show people what we meant by writing about what the term actually means, we just use the term almost in a lazy way, assuming people know what it means. And it's always good, like when people start getting upset about like words like gospel and redemptive or whatever it is, because all it means is that we don't want to ditch the word as much as that. Instead of just using the word as a blanket statement, we just have to explain what it means. And I think it actually allows the content to go deeper. And so it's a good opportunity, right? So instead, so I think in your, I read your piece, Pipe. It was good. I'm not just patting you on the back right now, but it was a good piece. And I think you explained what you meant by the word redemptive without just dropping the word and having the piece itself actually lose the depth of what it would have been if you hadn't done that. So it's a good opportunity. Let's explain the terms. Let's define our terms, man. Let's define the relationship, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to go in a completely different direction than that. And my thing is this, having just tried to make a movie and, you know, Lord willing, having made a decent independent film, it's so hard just to make a movie at all. And it's even like doubly hard to make a movie that's any good. And I think just do that, you know, and Pipe, I think that's what you were appreciating about these films that you wrote about was the fact that they were really, really well-told stories mm-hmm. about aspects of life that are somewhat universal and relatable.
Right.
And I think the best movies are that, such that, you know, as a Christian, as a thinker, as a sentient being, we can watch those stories and we can go, you know, what do we think of this in light of what we know about Christ? Those are the best Christian movies.
That piece that you just described is what's missing. Is people do not want to think. They want it to be, they want to be handed sort of a blanket recommendation. So I listened to an interview recently with a lady named Alyssa Wilkinson. She's a film reviewer, worked for Christianity Today, now works for, I can't remember, a not Christian website, but she's a Christian reviewer of film. And so she reviews films very thoughtfully and said, I'm trying to remember what movie it was. I think it was a Martin Scorsese film or something like that. And she basically said, it's really good in that film critic way. And people like took their kids to it based on that. And,
oh boy.
And I'm just, you know, and I read and I'm like, that's what happens when we say a movie has redemptive themes. People are like, oh, it's a great movie. Well, you can have redemptive themes and have a whole lot of terrible things in it, because sometimes those are the things that show, you know, the truth. And people
That's
just
right.
need to be thoughtful and do their own homework. And I tell you, I'm so sick of needing to give like the caveats on movies. Like, it's a great movie, but the language is
right.
a little much. Or, you know, there's some scenes that, you know, you might not want, you know, you might not want to look at. I just feel like, well, why don't people just go figure out what they can watch for themselves? I'm going to tell them why I liked it and let them figure out
you
the
should
rest.
Title every film article, There's Some Scenes.
Yeah, just There's Some Scenes. Yeah,
There's Some Scenes, the title of the movie.
I mean, but isn't there a way to find – I mean, it's like if you're just reading a film review, you know, I mean, they have all that information listed if you just even like attempt to go like an inch deep into finding out more details about the film in and of itself.
Yeah,
like what kind of language is in it, what kind of scenes are in it. I mean, like to me, like a good film review is just talking about the content. It doesn't have to get in. It doesn't have to become like a you know, warning
yeah, it's
signed
it's
all the way through.
It's story and artfulness. You know, did the movie accomplish what it set out to do? That's sort of what movie reviews should do. Now, the question of do you want to watch what the movie set out to do is something for, you know, parents to determine for their kids or grownups to determine for themselves. And I think we have started slapping redemptive on things as almost like a parent approved or something like that. And that, to me, it cheapens the word. Like you said, Ronnie, like it needs the explanation of what does this mean? Because I wouldn't recommend Manchester by the Sea to any family. It is a dark, depressing, profane movie. And
you probably
incredible.
Wouldn't do that with Silence either by Scorsese. So,
I haven't seen it. That one didn't sort of draw me in. But yeah, movies can be so profound, and you go, yeah, you don't take your kids to that. Not a great
boys.
Idea.
Let me run a theory by you, and this is a theory that sort of informs my film watching, and I think at some level informs my film making. I think for a film to be interesting and watchable, it sort of has to be equal parts 50-50 total depravity of man and a reflection of the fact that we're created in God's image. And I think when we skew that balance too far in either direction, it just becomes a really hard movie to watch. So you talk about like early Tarantino. Some of those films are really tough to watch because they were kind of off the charts total depravity. like all you saw was darkness. All you saw was, you know, the deepest, darkest, most ugly parts of what it means to be a human being.
Yes.
Conversely, when you're spoon fed some, you know, morality tale, that's all kind of ice cream and puppy dogs, then, you're off the charts in the other direction and it becomes just this treacly sort of saccharine mess that you don't want to watch. So I think a film has to, it has to kind of strike right in the middle, and the kind of films that you, like to watch and like to write about, Pipe, and the kind of films that we've enjoyed together over the years, Big R, I think are, you know, they hit that balance pretty well.
Yeah, I think you just described like a good film, right? When it sort of at least moderately like covers the basis. And again, it's we're getting into subjective territory here, right? Because people like to see different things. People have different desires and tastes
Some people's tastes are terrible. Can we just like, we don't need to validate all tastes.
No, that's true. But I mean, but you know, for you guys, like, so for you guys, you know, it's different. Like, you guys are in a place where you guys got young kids and you're taking them to movies, of which you don't have to have an enormous amount of taste. It's just more function than form, right? You know, we're going to go out, we're going to do some popcorn and some milk duds, and we're going to enjoy the film. And then, but that's different than being able to say, well, you know, this is something that's going to improve my perspective on things. It's gonna deepen me a little bit, and I think that's what we enjoy. That's what we're looking for in a film or a book or music, anything, you know, that anything that, you know, sort of enters into the arena of art, you know.
Indeed, boys, I want to talk about something that doesn't enter into the arena of art and doesn't even that's necessarily good. Enter into the arena of anything that I want to look at. But Big R, you brought this to our attention. You texted in again in our pre-show production meetings, which are extensive. You shared a photo of Charles Spurgeon. And what was interesting about this Spurgeon photo is that it was a beardless Spurgeon. So short of like the big meaty, like ham head with the huge beard and like the cigar jammed in the mouth that you usually see of Spurgeon, it was a hairless, like unbearded Spurgeon. And I have to tell you, And Pipe and Big R, you guys can riff on this a little bit. It was disconcerting. And I want to talk about what Spurgeon's career would have been like had he remained beardless, because I think it would have been a completely different situation. He wouldn't have gotten the respect and he wouldn't have had the gravitas that we think of when we think of Spurgeon had he remained that way. So, Pipe, I want you to talk about what you saw in that picture and how it made you feel.
Well, you used the phrase big, meaty ham head. That's pretty accurate, just minus the beard. Mm-hmm.
A lot of flesh there. Just a lot of flesh.
Also, you know? The song Dude Looks Like a Lady comes to mind. He has a sort of a school marm look to him. I mean, I'm pretty sure that the picture has three different faces. We'll post this to the Happy Rant Facebook page and Twitter account, so you can all listeners can all see just the wonder that is beardless Spurgeon. But yeah, he has just sort of a schoolmarm look to him. He looks like the cranky aunt who like would lock the cousins in the cellar or something. I mean, just it's rough. He looks rough, scary. Mm. And hard to call this guy the Prince of Preachers.
Big R, you found the picture. Clearly, you were.
It was actually Piper. Piper posted it first.
It was Piper.
I was riffing off of Piper's discovery.
Oh, interesting. Now, what are your thoughts on it, Big R?
Well, yeah, you know, it's so funny, right? Because we are so like we're people. It just shows how much like image comes into perception, right? And I think. Man, you look at Spurgeon and everybody just thinks of, you know, this big manly dude with the beard and just, you know, he commands all this presence. And then you get a shot of him without his beard, you know, and he's looking like the Michelin man, you know, and you're like, you're just kind of, you know, he's looking like Pillsbury Doughboy, right? And you're going like, wait a minute, man, I'm looking at my, you know, lectures from Spurgeon on my shelf right now thinking, man, do I open that now? Or like, do I take this guy serious? You know, it's so funny how that like with subconsciously even that sort of enters into your brain and you're thinking like, oh, this is the guy that everybody's just like the greatest preacher, you know, of all time. And like, he doesn't look like greatest preacher of all time until he has his beard. And then, you know, now he carries the presence, you know, and has the image of a guy like that. But it's funny how psychological that is for us.
I think it also, you know, there's been sort of this movement in the Reformed world that like beards are super manly. And, you know, it's sort of this, people with beards like to mock those of us who don't grow beards. And and I look at this and I go, yeah, but what are you hiding? Like, what's underneath that beard? You know, you come out here all manly and tough, but it's a little bit. So Ted and I were talking about in the last episode how when we played football, we wore neck rolls to look 20 pounds heavier, look tougher. I think the beard is sort of the neck roll for pastors. You're just trying to look more of something, and you're hiding something. And those of us who don't have to grow beards can probably feel a greater, it's like, we don't have to feel anything when you mock us. We're just like, all right, well, why don't you take your costume off?
Beard is kind of the neck roll for pastors. That's literally the most insightful thing I think I've ever heard.
That's what it feels like.
I really appreciate that. That's helpful. That's super helpful. And I feel like, you know, Justin Taylor is going to hear that and he's going to wish he wrote it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that was the greatest defense from a guy who can't grow a beard that I've ever heard for not growing a beard. I mean, that was Piper. That was, yeah. But I mean, if I could clap right now, I would.
You can clap. I mean, it doesn't come through real well in audio. It's kind of pops and crackles a little bit.
Dude, we're going to look back on this beard thing in about 10 years, and we're going to feel so ridiculous about it. You know what I mean? It's sort of
given like the style and the shape of some of these dudes that have just gone like literally bonkers with it. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know,
it's like looking at pictures of your parents like from the 70s, you know, and you look at what they looked like and what they were wearing and you sort of snickered. That's what we're going to do in 10 years when we look at this beard phase that we're in.
It's going to be like us looking back at pictures of people from like the Civil War era. It's essentially the same
well,
thing.
That's looking at pictures
of Abraham Lincoln and going, well, that was interesting, but yeah, I don't know. Oh, look, everybody looks like that now. Wow.
The first hipster, Abraham Lincoln.
What's funny is that when I posted this picture, Christian George, who's a Spurgeon scholar and also has a good sense of humor, so he's not he laughed at it, and then he posted a link to a blog that he actually put up back in October called How Spurgeon's Beard Launched His Ministry. So I didn't know this existed, but yeah, it's like an 800 word blog post sort of giving a little bit of a bio and how he went from sort of a scorned teenager who all the pastors in the area made fun of him for being sort of young and dumb, even though he was pretty bright, and how then growing a beard like in his 20s was the thing that turned him into somebody who was respected, which is really funny.
Wow.
And kind of pathetic.
Yeah.
Not Spurgeon.
Commands a little, it's just a beard is like, you know, I still think of a beard as like something my dad would have done, even though he was never a beard guy, but it does, it commands kind of this sort of older wisdom, you know, respect thing. I don't know why. It's too bad for the dudes that have had beards their whole lives, you know, regardless of the fact that it's become a trendy thing.
Right. They couldn't capitalize on the excitement of the whole thing.
Right. They're just like, no, I've just had a beard forever because I'm just not that handsome and I need a beard.
Just wanted to cover 2/3 of my face.
Exactly. I just, you know, that's, yeah.
Oh, Judas. Boys, we got time for one more little brief item here. This was a Twitter exchange having to do with fame with celebrity pastors. And Big R
always
set this up for us.
Yeah, no, I just saw this.
Attention. Why don't
this wasn't included in our what did we do? 4 or 5 hours of show prep this morning.
Yeah,
but this wasn't included in that. But my wife showed me a little tweet exchange between Tim Keller, and this guy that wrote all angry saying, "I'm so over celebrity pastors who, you know, they tweet out their 140 character words of wisdom, and then everybody starts responding, and then they never respond to the comment." And the guy said, "I'm so over it. I'm just going to go back to talking to my own pastor." And then Tim Keller actually responds to him and says, "Good idea."
So it was Timmy.
Yes.
Scathing.
So TK comes in for the knockout punch on that one. And I just thought, oh my gosh, like that is so funny. I love it. I love it. But, you know, okay, so you get a guy like TK or even Pipes Pop, you know, and you just go, if these guys spent their day responding to the comments, like that would literally be the full-time job that they have, which is just responding to comments after they tweet something.
I just was talking to my dad on the phone last night and we were talking about internet criticism. for a variety of reasons. And he said, mm-hmm. if I take one glance at my Twitter mentions, it will ruin the next hour. It just, I mean, just,
I believe it.
I mean, both because of the heat that people throw, and some of them are super scathing and really just kind of subhumanly awful.
Vicious.
But then, and then also, but like it could also just be the time suck of if I started replying to the people who said nice things. It's insane. And so when people, if you look at somebody and they have, you know, like 600,000 Twitter followers, don't ever expect them to reply to you. That's nonsense. But that response by Keller was so funny.
Yeah, that's when a response is necessary and needed. And yeah, it was great.
Let me ask one hard-hitting question of you, Big R, man of the cloth, before we wrap here, and we have to wrap soon. Do you consider yourself a celebrity pastor? And do you respond to things on Twitter from people?
Guys, I think it's a well-known item here that the three of us are celebrities, but we are D-list celebrities. So, I mean, we are, there are layers to the, in the world of celebrities, and we're on the D-list. I think Piper at one point said C-, and I brought us back down to D. Maybe Piper is a C-.
But here's the thing. You're back in world traveling mode, which means that I think the star is rising. I think we can get to a solid C-C by the end of the spring.
Maybe by the end of the spring, summer, maybe I'll be up there. You know, maybe I'll be a C-lister. I mean, certainly we're not up there with B-listers like Jared C. Wilson, who, you know, of course, you know, would never want to do like a podcast with at Ronnie J. Martin or anything like that. But I consider myself on the D-list, hoping to get to the C-list, hoping that by the time I get to the C-list, you boys will be able to join me, because I don't want to be anywhere that you're not. And you know why that is? Because hashtag I'm with us.
There it is. Baby, you're pushing for that Jared C. Wilson podcast, though. That's the second mention this morning.
You know,
would
I just kind of thought,
for you?
Well, it was just fascinating because I saw Jared C. Wilson did something like a while ago where he said, dude, I would love to do a podcast, but I don't know how to like do technology. And I thought, I wonder who Jared C. Wilson would do a podcast with. And then it just dawned on me
technology.
That
technology, the guy tweets like,
I know it's baffling, but I thought, during, you know, the Jared, Super Bowl. But I thought Jared C. would never, as a B-lister, he would never go to a C or a D. Like, he would have to do an A-list. He would go to an A-list guy for a podcast. I just thought that would be a Jared C. move. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, he can do what he wants.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that wasn't
the question.
Yeah.
The other question.
I don't care what he does.
The other question
is.
About.
I don't think of him.
Can the podcast get gospel in the title? I think that's really the other criteria. Is that, you know, can you get gospel in the title? And yeah, I don't know who he would do a podcast with. Although I do think that by the fact that I brought up Christian George earlier, I think we're building some goodwill here, because those two are thick as thieves. So
there you go. There it is.
I think the gospel cast
with Jared C. Wilson.
We're building your cred, Ronnie. You might, yeah, the gospel Spurgeon beard cast with Jared C. Wilson and Ronald J. Martin.
Wow. What about Timothy George? What about Timothy Keller?
Timothy George or Christian George?
Oh, is it Christian George?
Christian is Timothy's
son. There's all
kinds
of Georges.
Yeah,
which
so
one's
many Georges.
The kid?
Christian George Christian Bush? Is the son.
Okay, so we got a podcast now with Christian George Bush, Jared C. Wilson,
Timothy George,
Ronnie
Christian
Martin,
George, Timothy Keller.
And Stephen, obviously Stephen Altrogi.
Right, for 6 weeks.
Strokes. So
gospel cast. I'm confused, but we're gonna. So, guys, listeners, just be looking for that. That's gonna be launching in the next, you know, couple of years.
If it seems confusing, it won't be when it works itself out. I mean, that's, we can guarantee that. It'll find.
Just waiting on Trokes.
Yep.
Right. Just waiting on Trokes to put this together. Yeah.
Boys, this has been illuminating. It's been interesting and it's been fun. I hope you both have had a good time. This has redeemed the monsoon experience that I had running into the building this morning. So
it's redeemed a lot. I think we should change this to the redemptive rant. Mm.
Yeah, well, go pull a John Hamm, sip some scotch, pull a crisp white dress shirt out of your desk drawer, pull the suit off back of your office door. You'll be good to go in no time. Slick that hair back and off you go.
Already done it, baby. Already done it. Right. And I'm ready to inspire these students. I'm going to walk around on some tables like Robin Williams in Dead Poets Society. And
shout,
it's going to
be a captain,
beautiful
my thing. Captain at random times.
All the time.
Big T, that's just a given. We literally, when we think of you, we don't think of you in any other light but that light.
I want you to think of me in those terms. I really
do. I mean, I've never not thought of you in those terms. I've never not thought of you as Robin Williams stepping on the desk.
Baby, that's a beautiful thing. And you know what? I'm going to leave the audience with that because that's how I want them to think of me as well. We have wandered to and fro. Until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. Resonate has helped us with our editing and mastering pretty much from the beginning of the podcast. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Mark and Jake do a fantastic and timely job with all sorts of podcast services. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast.
Rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. Give thanks in all circumstances. God invites us to cultivate thankful hearts by turning our eyes toward Him in good times and bad. To listen to more Abide Christian Meditations, just go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Abide Christian Meditation. You can also download the Abide app for more biblical meditations at abide.com.